This session is called Communication and Misunderstandings. Some words are like rays of sunshine in a cloudy sky. They are so positive, so undeniably celebrated, that it completely slips our minds that there might be a darker side to them. Although psychology has literally built its altars around these words, offering them up as a universal band-aid for every baby bump, it is appropriate to raise an eyebrow from time to time and wonder if their shining aura does indeed carry a shadow. Because even light casts shadows, doesn't it? And I firmly believe that acknowledging the existence of those shadows is part of the healing process, the growth process, and that glorious self-development everyone is talking so much about now. Sometimes we need to put on our devil's advocate hat and calmly show the other side of the coin, because that's often where the most interesting discoveries lie. And today, we will look at one of the pillars of psychological practice, communication and discussion, a topic that could be described as the superstar of human interaction. Just communicate, the headlines proclaim, and the words of the mentors resonate in all directions. Where there is a problem, there is a need for discussion. But is it really that simple? Just discuss? Just communicate? How is it that yet most of us leave some discussions with a head full of questions, a bitter feeling, or, let's face it, even a slightly bruised ego? Discussing is not just talking. To discuss is to create space, and not just any space. The right kind, safe, empathetic, willing to listen. How often, for example, do we find ourselves participating in a discussion tired, overwhelmed, or so invested in our own truth that we hear other perspectives only as a distant beep? From the start, we break the rules of constructive play. Psychosynthesis speaks of so-called subpersonalities, our inner parts that sometimes come to the surface. And frankly, not all of these characters are invited guests at the discussion party. In one situation, a moron enters the stage. In another, a hysteric, a critic, or a cynic. Our shadow characters tend to complicate discussions. They create an atmosphere that explodes emotionally, goes off topic, or simply pulls off arguments in a costume of offensive irony or mockery. And we are trapped. What does such a discussion bring? Nothing but a waste of energy. So sometimes it's better to turn off the spotlight, close the curtain, and stop the game. Paradoxically, it is the ability to let things go that can be the path to greater understanding. Because when is a discussion worth having? In one case, when the other side actually listens. Manipulation and the truth game. Discussion is a tool that is often used not as a bridge between opinions, but as a masked tool of control. Under the guise of an exchange of views, many push their point of view, convince, criticize, and above all manipulate, subtly but effectively. It is a game of who is right, where victory mainly means the defeat of the other side. That might be fine if it were a chess game, but in reality, there are no winners in this game, just an unfortunate alloy of emotions and unspoken feelings. Thomas More, whose book Soulmates serves as a clue in the storm of relationship conflicts, suggests a specific approach to discussions between partners. He recommends letting one of them really talk in depth and turning a receptive ear to the other. No mincing of words, no lightning reactions. Such a situation isn't just a listening exercise. It's a test of patience, tolerance, and, above all, the ability to understand not only the words, but also the emotions hidden between the sentences. Discussion has its place, of course, but we need to police its rules as responsible garden guardians. If it is an online environment, the problem is amplified by anonymity. People play fixed roles where opinions are not stored, but egos and statuses are. Clean space virtually disappears. But at what cost? Discussion is also a nice mirror of our inner world. And like any mirror, it shows what we don't want to see. It shows how much we need to be right, have the last word, or simply be heard. Research has confirmed that we often believe more things that validate our worldview or self-worth, while easily ignoring contradictory ideas. It's the famous confirmation bias, a kind of mental crutch that keeps us cool even though we don't carry much new information. Awareness of this might be the first step towards approaching dialogue more maturely. Let's try it another way. And what if we imagine the discussion in our own lives as a laboratory? As a place of experimentation where we seek more listening and thinking. As a space where it is not necessary to have the last word, but rather to think carefully about what we are saying, why we are saying it, and whether it is really to our benefit. I'm sure you know it. All day long, it looks like a calm summer sky without a cloud, and then suddenly, without warning, a bolt from the blue. Why didn't you take out the trash? You're thinking, this is no reason for a gladiator arena. But what if we told you that these arguments over seemingly small things aren't just about trash, plates in the sink, or socks on the floor? Often there is something much deeper behind them, perhaps even so deep that it would register in a psychoanalysis class and put Sigmund Freud to shame. Think about it. Is it really about who did or did not take out the basket? Or is it the feeling of being taken for granted, slightly overlooked, and frustration that things aren't working exactly as you'd like them to? The smallest of conflicts have a special superpower. They can escalate at the speed of light because they carry a tinge of something that has been unresolved in our hearts for a long time. We may not even be aware of it, but it only takes one sensitive prick of a pin and everything flies. According to the well-known psychologist and philosopher Paul Watzlawick, communication takes place on two levels, digital and analog. The first, digital, is simple and factual. There's a pile of dirty dishes in the sink. The second, analog, involves everything we carry, our expectations, feelings, frustrations, fears, and thought patterns. In other words, the phrase, "Someday I'll drown in dirty plates," may not only communicate despair about the kitchen, but also that we feel like everything is being thrown at us, yet we would appreciate a little care or attention ourselves. The plate as a metaphor of relationship. Try to imagine a very ordinary situation. It's dinner time. One of you is eating your last slice of pizza, while the other is furious that there are dirty pots all around, waiting to see who will clean up after the meal. And then? "You never clean anything up. I'm always coming after you." Seemingly, the whole thing has blown up over the washing up, but what if there's something else behind it? Maybe the problem is a feeling that housework isn't evenly distributed. Maybe it's a dissatisfaction buried deep inside that's much harder to talk about than a pile of dishes. And from there, we get to the heart of the problem. Most of the arguments about little things are really a mirror of bigger issues and needs. Do you feel valued? Are your feelings being heard? Do you know what you want from your partner, and are you saying it in a way that the other party understands? When the plates speak for us, arguments about little things often express something we can't say directly, like wanting someone to understand us better, to notice our daily efforts, or that it hurts us to feel like we're not supported enough. And now you're asking, well, wait. How else am I supposed to communicate that I want help around the house other than by yelling at someone across the room? I have a solution for you. The first step to resolving these situations is to stop and really think about what is behind your upset. I have some basic questions that may help you. What's really bothering me? Is it the pile of laundry or the feeling that no one has noticed how hard I work? What message am I giving? What is my annoyance really saying? Does it mean, "I feel overworked and I want you to know it"? Or, "I'm worried that the relationship isn't balanced"? What do I want to hear or experience from the other person? Maybe a simple, "Thank you for caring, I appreciate it." What repeats? Is there a situation or type of conflict that surfaces over and over again? Whether it's a lack of communication, a feeling of being overlooked, or a deeper issue of mutual balance in the relationship. Constructive dialogue instead of fighting. What we say has power, and it depends on how we formulate our words. Remember, when we throw phrases like "always," in someone's face, or never, we're more likely to create a bigger problem than we are to solve the situation. Try to practice. Communicate with I sentences. Instead of, "You're no help at all," say, "I'm feeling overwhelmed with the housework and I'd like you to be more involved." What would you say if you and a partner or coworker created a rule of small check-in moments? Once a week, perhaps during dinner or a quiet moment, ask each other, "How are you feeling? What can I do to make you feel better?" This simple gesture can prevent a lot of potential arguments. And what to do when the situation is already too tense? Humor can often save the day. For example, instead of shouting, "Your socks on the floor again," try, "Honey, your socks made a new life for themselves on the couch today. How about we send them back to the drawer where they came from?" Making light of the situation can change the dynamic. Learn to really listen. Now you may be thinking, "But I am listening. I am engaging in the conversation, responding, reacting." And this is where the problem often lies. Are you really listening, or are you waiting for your moment to insert yourself into the debate? How many times during a conversation do you find yourself already working out in your head the cleverest answer, the funniest comment, or the decisive argument instead of understanding the message? You are one step ahead in your thoughts, with your response, not with the words that were just spoken. Maybe you're not alone in this. In fact, most of us have never learned to do it properly, to really listen. Frankly, who among us would want to boast that we are masterful at faking listening? Everyone likes to feel like a good listener. After all, it sounds like a great bonus to our personality, doesn't it? But the true meaning of listening isn't in the occasional nod, the occasional muttered, "Huh," while you're mentally planning what to cook for dinner. Real listening requires your presence, your full concentration, your patience. But who has time for that in today's hectic world, right? I could go on for a long time about how today's lack of real listening can be illustrated. One such example, however, will probably stay in my mind forever because it has taught me perfectly. It was last night. My daughter rolled up to me with her eyes on the edge of her seat, her small frame seeming even smaller and more fragile than usual. Something inside me immediately reacted. Probably the maternal part of me that thought it knew in advance what the problem was and how to solve it. "Mom, I don't really know if I want to go to dance class," she said. What happened next is a great example of how not to listen properly. Instead of quieting down for a moment, really focusing on her and waiting to see what she would say next, I immediately started committing one listening mistake after another. "What do you mean you don't know?" I shot her a question that didn't at all suggest I understood what she was saying. Quite the opposite. It only expressed my impatience and unwillingness to accept her uncertainty. And then it went from bad to worse. "You wanted to go there so much. You have friends there. Am I supposed to cancel again?" We talked about one sentence after another that carried a clear message. "I can't hear you. I don't understand you. I'm not giving you the space to express yourself." The reason? Because from the very first moment I drowned my attention in my own thoughts. Maybe I wanted to resolve the situation quickly. Maybe I wanted to prove myself right. And I certainly didn't give her the benefit of the doubt. When I calmed down, withdrew my expectations, and abandoned trying to fix anything immediately, only then I could begin to listen. And you know what turned up? It wasn't that she didn't want to go to dance class now. She wasn't spoiled and vain. She was afraid to tell me that she did it just to make me happy, and until then, she was just shyly silent. And I finally had an opportunity to understand everything. So obvious. So simple. And this is where the principles of real listening come in and saved me then. So go ahead, try to adopt them for yourself. They come from communications expert Peter Bregman, and while he claims they're simple and effective, trust me, it's not an advertisement. Number one, really listen. It sounds like a cliche, doesn't it? But think about how often you really listen. That means not just with your ears, but with your whole body. Don't write emails during a call. Don't write down purchases. Don't think about what you're going to say next. be there, with the person. Listen to his tone, his words, his hesitations. Talk less, focus more. It helped me in the beginning to imagine that I would have to write a summary from what the other side was saying, and I had to remember as much as possible. Number 2, don't prepare answers. This is a tricky spot. Let's face it, how many times do we think about how brilliantly we're going to answer instead of listening? How do we gracefully resolve the argument, sarcastically push over an objection, or just show that we're right? Try it another way. Don't plan anything, just be present in the conversation. See what comes naturally. And only after the other side has finished speaking, take the time to think through your response and respond. Number 3. Repeat. No, it's not parroting. Well, actually, it kind of is, but with the right intention. When someone tells you they're upset about your decision, try repeating, "So you're upset about the way I made my decision?" Understanding what the other person's intent was brings great value to the dialogue. It clarifies everything that needs to be clarified and avoids 1,000 misunderstandings just because you thought something was so. Number 4. Ask. They can be simple, complimentary questions. Ask more. Ask deeper. What exactly do you mean? Why do you feel that way? What bothers you most about it? But especially avoid passive-aggressive sentences like, "Are you crazy? Are you serious?" These questions do not lead to understanding, but to conflict. Most importantly, listening is an art, not a talent you are either born with or not. It can be learned gradually, consciously, whether it's with children, colleagues, friends, or your partner. Be an example of really listening. We must accept the fact that we are different. Accepting the fact that my reality is completely different from anyone else's is a very freeing feeling. When two people meet in any relationship, it's good to accept one simple but fundamental truth right from the start. We are different. And that's perfectly okay, even necessary. Imagine a world where everyone thought alike, had identical opinions, and had equal appetites for pizza. Not only would that be deadly boring, but it would also rob us of the uniqueness that makes every relationship something special and unique. Differences are the spice of life and relationships. We just have to learn to deal with them sometimes so that the spice doesn't burn too much in our eyes. Now, let's get specific. We can't think that if we meet someone, an exchange of, "Oh, that's wonderful, I agree with you on every detail," will magically work. Relationships are not advertisements for a perfect life where everything fits together like melodies in a fairy tale. There are topics on which we agree, and then others, and there are plenty of those, where opinions diverge. And that's natural. We cannot delude ourselves into thinking that we can avoid any conflict just because we get along. After all, each of us makes our way through life a little differently. Some people walk briskly, as if catching the last bus. Others dawdle and look for butterflies with their eyes. And it is this specific walking that will inevitably lead us sooner or later to situations where we no longer hold hands as tightly and harmoniously as before. This is not to say that we have to argue or that conflict is some kind of predetermined fate for every relationship. No, no, not at all. But sometimes all it takes is a little thing, like one of you pushing toothpaste down the middle of the tube while the other considers it a crime against humanity, or when one likes to play their favorite song at full volume every day while the other would appreciate a little more silence. And let's be honest, some of what the other does or says really sets us off from time to time, not like a volcano before an eruption, but in that surprisingly calm inner bubble. Let's dive into practical part, active listening training. The goal of active listening training is to improve your ability to fully perceive and understand what the other person is saying, thereby strengthening relationships and communication. The following exercises will give you a clear overview and structure. Active listening is not just passive listening. It is a process of focusing fully on the speaker, trying to understand their thoughts and feelings while letting them know that you hear and understand them. Let's start with preparation. Find a partner. Choose someone to practice with. It can be anyone you feel relaxed with. Clarify the topic of discussion. Agree on a specific topic you want to talk about. It can be about a personal experience, an opinion on current events, or a goal you want to achieve. Second step is execution. Your partner will talk about your chosen topic for 5 to 10 minutes. Your task is only to listen. Avoid any interruptions, comments, or advice during this time. After your partner has finished speaking, summarize what you heard. Use sentences like, "I heard you feel," or "I understand that it's important to you." Ask for more details to help you better understand your partner's thoughts. For example, "Can you tell me more about how this happened?" Or, "How did the situation make you feel?" And last step is self-reflection. Write down what you have learned about your ability to listen. What thoughts were going through your mind as you listened? Think about the look on your face, your tone of voice, and your attitude. How did you show that you were listening? What would you like to improve for the next exercise? Let's talk about expressing emotions. Expressing emotions is one of the most important aspects of interpersonal communication, even though we often don't give it the attention it deserves. Although we experience emotions every day, from joy to anger to sadness, we don't always find the right way to share these feelings with others, and it's being able to express emotions well that can help us understand ourselves better, improve our relationships, and bring more peace and balance into our lives. You may be wondering why we give so much weight to expressing emotions in the first place. Shouldn't it be easier to keep our feelings to ourselves and try to chew them over in the quiet of our minds? In fact, it's just the opposite. Emotions are like a naughty little gremlin. If we ignore them, they go on an even bigger rampage. Acknowledging and expressing what we feel not only helps to relieve the pressure in our soul, but it also serves other important life purposes. Strengthening relationships. When we express our emotions, we allow others to better understand who we are. Whether it's our joy, sadness, or frustration, sharing our feelings with others creates a connection based on trust and openness. For example, if you tell your partner honestly, "I'm sad because I feel like we don't spend enough time together," it gives you a chance to work out the problem. In comparison, passive-aggressive deployment of a silent household doesn't help anyone. Expressing emotions opens the door to empathy and fosters deeper and authentic relationships. Understanding yourself. Expressing emotions is not just about others, it's also about ourselves. Reflecting on what we feel allows us to better understand our inner processes. For example, when we find that a colleague at work is annoying us, it may not actually be about his constant sipping of tea, but rather that we feel a lack of appreciation for our own work. When we name and analyze emotions, we give ourselves room for our own growth. Mental health and healing. Emotions are like unwashed laundry. If you let them build up for too long, one day they will overwhelm you. Expressing emotions helps to gradually pull these skeletons out of the closet and prevents small issues from becoming huge problems. By openly sharing feelings, we give ourselves a chance to process past and present pain and avoid unnecessary stress. Yes, expressing emotions can be difficult at times, especially when you feel like others won't understand you or you're afraid you'll make the situation worse. That's why it's a good idea to learn a few simple but effective techniques. First technique, use I statements. Instead of pointing fingers and blaming others, try to express the emotion you are experiencing in terms of your feelings. For example, "I feel irritable when I come home and the place is a mess because I feel like I have to take care of everything myself." This approach is less confrontational and increases the chance of constructive dialogue instead of throwing mugs. Second technique, keep it specific. Concreteness is the key to understanding. Instead of a vague, "I'm sad," add details. "I'm sad because I was hoping we'd have dinner together like we planned, and instead, you played video games for the 9th time tonight." Specific situations give the other person a great clue as to how they can help you in the future. Third technique, learn to recognize your emotions. If you only describe your feelings as good or bad, it's time to expand your emotional vocabulary. What are you feeling? Relief? Disappointment? Anger? Sadness? Or joy? The more specific the naming, the better you will understand your situation. And last technique, express what you need. Feelings are fine, but it's equally important to deliver what you actually expect from the other party. Make it clear. For example, "I need you to go for a walk with me tonight so we can talk quietly." This will ease the way to a solution instead of leaving everything to chance. Without communication, we would probably fall into chaos, or at least have very lonely and strange lives. Communication is not just about the words we choose, but also about the way we say them, the nonverbal cues we add, and most importantly, how we listen.